Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. So maybe you've heard about this. At a recent Brooklyn real estate summit, a lawyer gave a talk to building owners and drew attention for the forthrightness with which he addressed the issue of clearing out rent-regulated tenants. The event was written up by Will Parker, a researcher and reporter at The Real Deal, which covers New York's real estate news. The headline was, "An Insider's Guide to Evicting Rent-Stabilized Tenants." Gothamist reported on the report using the word vampires in its headline. With about a million rent-stabilized apartments left in the city and landlords hungry to get people out of them, we're joined by Will Parker and by Emily Goldstein of the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development, ANHD, that advocates for affordable housing in New York City, and they're calling on the city to use more tools to protect tenants. Welcome back to WNYC, Will Parker.
Thanks very much for having me back.
And welcome, Emily Goldstein.
Thanks for having me.
So, Will, tell us your story. What was that event exactly?
So the event was called Tenant Buyouts, the Next Generation. It was a speech given as part of a real estate conference held in Brooklyn. And instead of being about tenant buyouts and how to do them, it was more about how they're more difficult now as a way of getting tenants out of a building. Essentially, the real estate attorney, Michelle Lickowitz, said tenants are expecting much more money for a landlord to be able to buy them out of their building. It's becoming much more costly. So there are fewer tools now than there were, perhaps, for a landlord to get tenants out of a building.
And did they know you were there, that a journalist was listening?
Sure. We journalists from our publication were at various events that day at the conference, including this one.
So what were some of these tools to get people out of their rent-stabilized apartment?
So I think if you were a landlord there, you would have found a lot of it quite patronizing. It was a lot about how you can't harass people the way maybe you could previously, dance around them, pressure them. There's an updated housing code now that says, you know, even contacting someone too much about a buyout is a form of harassment. So it was really focused on the things that you can't do. You know, don't bring frivolous litigation, don't harass. And one thing that was really recommended was to do something called demolition eviction, which is a legal process through which you can demolish a building, plan a new one, and end the rent-stabilized leases at the tenants as part of that process.
So as specifically as you can, what were the ways, given the current restrictions, given the, you know, political climate and pushback against landlords who push too hard to get rent-stabilized tenants out of their apartments, what did she emphasize that they could do?
Really, demolition eviction. That was the thing. It was you know, you can do buyouts. Those are possible, but often it's becoming more difficult because people are, you know, demanding more money. There's a broader definition of harassment now that's going to get you in trouble if you are repeatedly calling a tenant and trying to pressure them out of the building. Bringing lawsuits against tenants because they violated some part of the lease, but you're trying to say they did, but they didn't actually. As a, you know, Donald Trump famously would bring these frivolous lawsuits against tenants at a building, 100 Central Park South, which he, you know, later admitted was didn't actually help him vacate that building. So it's more, you can't do those things as much. Really, demolition eviction is the best legal option at this point in time.
So describe demolition eviction for people not familiar with it.
So demolition eviction is a legal process through the Division of Housing and Community Renewal, state agency, in which a landlord who has a building that they would like to vacate in order to build a new one can terminate the leases of the rent-stabilized leases that, you know, typically can be renewed every year in order to build that new building, demolish the old one, build a new one. To do that, they have to pay a stipend to the tenants, help relocate them. They have to be relocated at an apartment that costs a similar amount of money and in the same area. But it is a setup process for a landlord to successfully evict tenants.
Do they ever actually have to do the demolition, demolish the building?
So this was a curious part of the speech that I attended. There's a very rigorous process with DHCR to make sure that the plans are in good faith. And it's been brought to my attention that there have been many cases where landlords' plans have been rejected because different filings contradicted each other and they just didn't make sense on paper. One thing that happened during the speech, though, was someone interrupted. It wasn't really even a question and answer part of the session. And they said, can I do demolition eviction, evict the tenants, and then not demolish the building? And the attorney said, you know, it's curious that there doesn't seem to be anything governing what you actually do after you've been approved.
Huh. So you don't perhaps have to actually demolish your building, suggesting that you can use this as a fake, phony, and fraud way of getting your rent-stabilized tenants out.
Well, it seems very unlikely after, you know, going through years of that process and having DHCR screen your, you know, all of your filings to make sure they make sense. But if for some reason, and some, you know, some attorneys have told me since then, you would have to be able to prove some sort of force majeure that made it impossible for you to carry out your project, then perhaps you would not be penalized for not following through with the project. But so, it seems quite unlikely.
So let me bring in Emily Goldstein here from ANHD, the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development. Emily, you're the advocate for affordable housing in this conversation. So do you have any idea if or how widely this demolition eviction has been used as kind of a trick to get rent stabilized tenants out?
It does get used. They don't have numbers on it. It's definitely, I would say, of all the things we see where rent-stabilized tenants are getting driven out, it's probably not one of the most common ones, but it certainly is out there, and it does happen from time to time.
And the lawyer, as you quote her, Will, did say that a, quote, nasty person with a grudge, unquote, might sue if no demolition takes place. So I guess nasty person with a grudge is one way to describe a tenant who loses a legal affordable apartment to a landlord acting in bad faith.
Yeah,
exactly.
Emily, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and that sort of points to what I thought was so fascinating about the article and then the documents that that the lawyer actually put up on her website and made public, was almost less about the particular tactic of demolition eviction and more the fundamental underlying tone and approach and understanding of who the tenants are. Tenants are not people living in homes who obviously want to stay in their homes often for the reason that that's their home, you know, and they can afford it, and it's their neighborhood, and they work hard, and they pay their rent. Tenants are obstacles. Tenants are nasty people who might sue you after you've driven them out. Like, tenants are something to be overcome in a landlord's pursuit of profit. And I think that fundamental sort of underlying assumption is what's actually so revealing.
And it being unusual to be so upfront about that in a public forum, even if it's how many landlords view their tenants.
Exactly. I think the frankness was almost refreshing, even though it's alarming.
And listeners, landlords, tenants, and obviously many landlords, including many listening right now, do not only see their tenants as obstacles to a greater payday and not real human beings with lives and homes. And obviously that's the case. But enough do that this is a problem in New York City and probably in a lot of other places too. So landlords, tenants, call in. Do you have a frontline story as the gap between regulated and market rents continues to diverge? Have you ever been harassed out of your apartment or attempted to be through demolition, eviction, or other means? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And in fairness to this lawyer, Will, I should say that she pushed back on especially the Gothamist coverage of her talk, which I guess kind of referred to the room of landlords and her by extension as vampires, by pointing out that she represents tenants as well as landlords, and that she thought the thrust of her argument was that the landlords needed to stop harassing people.
Yeah, that was certainly the way the beginning of it was framed. I mean, she was very clear that she thinks landlords should be open about their intention to displace. And she does use that word displace as part of the, you know, frank language that Emily referred to just now. But yeah, that was her focus was on don't harass, don't frivolously sue, and don't have supers go in and do your work for you. Be up front, let the tenants know what you're planning on doing, and then, you know, do demolition eviction as the best legal way to get what you want done.
And so, Emily, is some of the are some of the headlines about this overstated? In you know, after hearing the details,
I don't. I mean, I do give the lawyer credit for explicitly saying, you know, don't harass tenants. It's illegal. Don't do it. But I think that sort of ignores the fundamental contradiction that if the, you know, the way to make the most profit at this point in more and more neighborhoods is to get existing tenants out, and usually the only way to get existing tenants out is to harass them, because most tenants do want to stay in their homes. And as you said, there are lots of landlords that do not harass their tenants, that play by the book, that follow the rules, but there are too many that do. It's not a one-off case. It's not only the extreme situation like a Steve Croman that you see. It's really pervasive in more and more neighborhoods.
And remind people of the Steve Croman story.
Sure. So a few weeks ago, a landlord was indicted on criminal charges, and there's civil charges as well. The landlord's name is Steve Croman. He owns a lot of buildings, particularly on the Lower East Side, and is notorious for really aggressive forms of harassment. And so it's great to see that getting addressed, and to see various government agencies really working together to try to halt those practices. But it's also important to realize that that's not always what harassment looks like. It doesn't always look like banging on the door and threatening people. It can be much more subtle, but it has the same impact.
And what made this even a bigger news story, not that harassment and eviction and rent stabilization isn't always a huge story in New York, where affordable housing is, you know, maybe the biggest issue in the city on an ongoing basis, but that it happened just after the Steve Croman arrest, that this real estate summit took place, and then this made it into the news. Before we take a few phone calls, Emily, I want to give you a chance to get one of your group's solutions out there on the table. I know you have a proposal for something that you call a certificate of no harassment that's relevant to demolition eviction. What's that?
Yeah, it's relevant to demolition eviction, and it's relevant to the patterns we see in terms of how landlords are actually renovating apartments and then bringing in higher paying tenants if they are successful in getting their old tenants out. They're often using Department of Building permits to do those renovations, and in demolition eviction, certainly there's a whole process they have to go through with the Department of Buildings to get the relevant permits in order to get that approval from the state. And so we're looking for ways that we can do things at the city level, that the city government can really take action to help to turn the tide and curb harassment in a lot of neighborhoods around the city. We think one of those ways is to use the leverage the city has over Department of Buildings permits in order to say that landlords with a history of tenant harassment in the building are not going to be able to access those permits, which we think then means they wouldn't be able to bring in the higher paying rents, and it would basically discourage the entire practice.
So let's hear from a landlord. I think that's only fair after this conversation we've been having so far. Joseph in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thank you very much for calling.
Yes, hi. So I'm a small landlord. I own two buildings, and I have rent-stabilized tenants. And I play by the rules, but I have to say that I see what's happening around my neighborhood. Tenants are getting buyouts, and they're leaving, and people are making substantial profits on doing that. Now, it doesn't mean that these tenants have been harassed. They've been offered money, and they're willing to leave. But the fact is, the city has established a system that encourages, puts in huge incentives, huge economic incentives for landlords to want to get rid of their tenants. If I have a market rate tenant, I'm not looking to get rid of them. I'm trying to keep them. They're a great tenant. And I do my best to keep all my tenants happy. But you can see where, if you can double your rent, what's the incentive for the landlord to stay in the system? You don't get any tax breaks for that. Don't get any, you know, just more bills from the city, higher water rates, higher tax bills. So,
do you see a solution, Joseph?
I think that you have to, if you want landlords to be the providers of affordable housing, what I would believe is actually the role of government to provide affordable housing. But if we're saying that landlords are responsible to do that, then I should have a lower tax bill for each tenant who I'm giving an affordable apartment to. My water bill should not go up 10 or 20% a year because I'm providing an affordable. My rents don't go up. They go up zero. You know, that's what the city's been giving people.
Emily,
I think you have to look at the economics of the situation. You try to put in place a system that kind of creates negative incentives. What do you expect an unethical person to do?
Emily Goldstein from AHD. Any common ground with
Joseph? Think your description of the way the incentives currently work is spot on. I would describe it the same way, and I think you're pointing out the problem in terms of the incentive structure quite well. I appreciate that you try to act ethically, and many landlords do. I would say, you know, and again, an individual building may be different. Overall, landlords do make a profit and make approximately, roughly, I think, a 6 or 7% rate of return on rent-stabilized apartments. Again, that may vary, and that may be different in a given apartment or a given building. But citywide, I do think it's important to point out that landlords of rent-stabilized buildings and rent-stabilized apartments are making a profit. They're just not making nearly the profit they could make on market-rate units.
Joseph, thank you very much for your call. Call us again. Shailene in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Shailene.
Good morning. I found this topic so helpful. So we're going through something similar. I live in a rent-stabilized apartment in Queens. There's only 7 units. 6 are stabilized and 1 is destabilized. And I was wondering if at the conference, if the journalist heard the lawyer address any questions on how demolition eviction could start through the 1 destabilized unit.
Sure. As far as just there being 1 destabilized unit or 6 still stabilized, I think the issue is it's a way to end the stabilization of all of the units. So I think a landlord could begin the application process for a demolition eviction, with those stabilized tenants still there. And if they get approved, their building plans get approved, if it's all appears to be legit with the state, then they can end those tenancies.
And how would your certificate – well, let's see. Oh, we had a caller, but he hung up, who said he was in a situation where they tried to use a certificate of no harassment in New Jersey. This proposal, Emily, does it exist anywhere else where – landlords would be prevented from doing the kind of renovations that they want to do that could up the rent unless they have a good track record, the certificate of no harassment that you want the city to implement?
Yeah, so it currently exists in the zoning of a couple of neighborhoods in New York City. The most relevant one is the Clinton Special District on Manhattan's west side, and then there's a version of it in Williamsburg that got put in place in the 2005 rezoning there. So we've actually looked at that model and sort of tried to adapt it to the current time and to what it would look like to do it as a citywide law rather than zoning place by place. I don't know of a restriction like this in other states.
But it's a start in some parts of the
city.
It's
a start, and it's possible it could be a model.
While you're here, do you have a position on the Airbnb law that would make it illegal to advertise a vacant apartment for a stay of less than 30 days? It's already illegal to actually rent it, but this makes it illegal to post it to the Airbnb-type sites. And some advocates are saying these kinds of advertisements and the use of apartments for Airbnb in this way, in the massive way that it's apparently developing, is adding in a meaningful sense to the affordable housing shortage in New York. Do you have a position on that at Andy H.?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that assessment on the role that the Airbnb and others like them are playing on further squeezing the affordable housing market. Way too many apartments are being used in an illegal manner for these short-term rentals, and I do think this bill that just passed in Albany last week is a step forward towards curbing that process and towards trying to get the companies actually doing these listing sites and setting up, facilitating these short-term rentals to have some responsibility for the consequences of their business model.
Will Parker, working at The Real Deal, Do you get like whiplash from the gap between covering real estate by talking to landlords and owners versus talking to tenants? It seems like it's so polarized.
It can be very polarized. Obviously, you have two groups of people that have their attention on different issues. I think what we're talking about today is kind of where the two sides of the beat come together, where you have, you know, landlords and tenants that are engaged on the issue of rent stabilization and what the point of the program is. I think the landlord brought up an interesting point about why is he responsible for affordable housing stock. I think someone else would bring up the point that rent stabilization exists despite the, you know, this incredibly expensive, high demand real estate market. And, you know, with every eviction that takes place, of every rent stabilized tenancy that ends, those are units that are removed from the rent stabilized housing stock. So this is where the tenants and the landlord side of the story really come together, I think.
And we have to leave it there with Will Parker, researcher and reporter at The Real Deal, and Emily Goldstein of the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development. And we don't need no demolition eviction. Just get out.
Thanks.
Thanks for being with
us. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come. Stay tuned.